You're on Summer Overnights with Sunil Badami. Thanks to Miley Cyrus and Clive Palmer, we all know what twerking means now, although maybe we probably would like to forget it. But have you ever tried a cronut or schmeet? And what does YOLO mean? And what new word did Australia give to the world this year? Well, last week we chatted to author and self-confessed wordaholic David Astle about the history of the crossword on its 100th birthday. And if you were listening last week, you might remember David saying that crosswords were kind of like spies on culture, taking in the zeitgeist, current affairs, and also new usages, the words that people were using at any particular time. Well, being almost the end of the year, it's time for a roundup of the words that we used most this year, new words that were included in the dictionary for the first time, then some of the words we could definitely never hear again. And later, I'd love to hear from you about some of the words you think you might not have really wanted to hear or don't want to ever hear again after hearing them this year. Well, David joins us this morning. Good morning, David.
G'day, Sunil.
Firstly, before we get into the fun stuff, I have to ask you, what's a neologism?
Well, in the same way that people say cruciverbalist as crossword maker, just to fool the tax department, a fancy word for new word is neologism, which is an anagram of some lingo. And that's really what it is. It's just some lingo, but it's new lingo. And neo logos, new word, all Greek, and often all Greek to a lot of people who hear them.
So neologisms are basically new words. And when we were talking earlier, you mentioned that a lot of neologisms are portmanteau. Now, I always thought, apart from being a stevedore's foot...
Oh, gosh. Let me do the corny jokes here.
Or maybe, you know, a Queensland school bag. What is a portmanteau and how did they get that name?
Yeah, it's one of those fold-in bags that if you're carrying a suit and you don't want it to get completely mushed up, then you might get a portmanteau that folds into a sort of triptych. So it's they're loose folds, not to mangle the Pierre Cardin. And the portmanteau also is you in a linguistic way. It folds together, it dovetails two words, sometimes three, but usually two words in the classic way that smoke and fog gives us smog. Now, smog and chortle, which is snort and chuckle, that's a sort of a more sort of internal portmanteau. These were the bellwethers. These were the words that began the craze. But I'm telling you now, it has been turbo ever since, I reckon, about the 1980s, where we've just gone absolutely nuts for the portmanteau, or blend words, as they're also called.
So how do you think, you know, this kind of slanguage, what gave rise to this kind of slanguage, he says, using a portmanteau?
Well, that's exactly right. It's a perfect word to talk about portmanteau is slanguage. Well, slanguage is a really good example because even though that arguably is not a word, I knew instantly what you meant, and I would imagine so did 90% of the listeners, because that's the beauty of a portmanteau. It introduces two known ideas into a novel third, and so already we're across what this means. When I say that my son's room has a floor drobe in it, you're almost starting to guess what that means, because it is a portmanteau of floor and wardrobe. And yes, Finn, my son, pretty much has his whole ensemble just lying on the deck. So that's why. That's how that works. And I think that it's the familiarity factor that creates novelty, which is a pretty intoxicating recipe.
So why have they exploded so much in the last 20 or 30 years? What do you think the reason for that might be?
I think it's a playfulness too, let's face it. You know, there's a real, what's probably the strongest boom that's happened in the portmanteau subgenre is with man stuff. And I refer to, you know, people, I mean, there's bromance, which is a brotherly romance. Mm. There's manscaping, which is landscaping for men. Of the bodily kind. You know, we have, there are meggings, which are sort of, you know, male leggings. And there's even, if you, Young ladies, if you are seeing another bloke on the side, well, he can be your Mr. S. I think there's a fun, it's kind of fun play in that, but also too because blokes have been neglected in a lot of these sort of emotional terms. So there's a little bit of a pushback coming from the male sector to try and reclaim some space in this area of language.
Do you think also it might be something related to the internet? Because I've noticed that a lot of words that were on the list of words for this year, and they seem to be like, you know, lols or pun or seriously, S-R-S-L-Y. They seem to be these abbreviated terms that people would use in text messages or Twitter or something like that. And it seems that people are kind of, more people than ever before, you know, even whether they're self-publishing or writing on blogs or on the internet or, you know, chat rooms or comments on newspapers, more people than ever before are using words every day.
That's a really good point. And in fact, it's counterintuitive to a lot of people because they argue how sort of cyberspace, to use a bit of a dated term, is really eroding our language, when in fact we spend far more time devoting our thoughts to words and putting those words on the screen, the equivalent of the paper, than ever before, which makes us, it demands more literacy, it demands more creativity, it demands more brevity kind of mastery of thought. What's interesting too is that there was a survey that was done in the UK at a dating site called OkCupid, and they discovered that amongst the male and female clients of this vast of clientele that were getting the most callbacks and the most action, you'd have to say, were those who had the best grammar. So there's also a reward for having the old school values of correct language and being expressive and being appealing on the page with your words.
So how do words get adopted into usage, and how do they end up into the dictionary?
It is a formal process because dictionaries, while they are, they're an authority with a small a. It's very important to understand that because in the 20s, 1920s I'm talking about, so 100 years ago, let's say, the dictionary was seen as being the ultimate authority, whereas most lexicographers these days will say, using the words of Samuel Johnson, that it's a sort of instrument of the people, the dictionary. Mm. It's more a reflection on language. It captures a moment in language.
Like a crossword.
Like a crossword does. That's right. It's a witness to what is being said and what's being written. But mostly what's being written, and this is the thing, because words can be floated around the pubs and the streets. We overhear them in elevators and as we walk down the road. But it needs to be formalised into the written word. And that is why there is such a boom in new language at the moment, because there's a boom in written language. So you can actually measure, and it's important that you measure the use of a word, its advent, when it was used. And you're also looking for at least 6 independent, reputable citations. So it's not just that one sort of group of, World of Warcraft enthusiasts use a word like trolling. It's if Stephen Fry uses that word in a column, if it's mentioned in an article by the Independent, etc. It's looking for that word being accepted by independent commentators.
Well, I mean, I happen to see that the American-based Global Language Monitor said that to qualify, words, phrases and names must be found globally and must have a minimum of 25,000 citations, and they survey the internet, blogs, social media and over 275,000 forms of print and electronic global media. And I thought, isn't that interesting? Because in the past, maybe it took a longer time for slang or slanguage to be adopted because it would be harder to get those informal kind of citations, whereas now they're all on the internet and you just have to put a search kind of engine out, and perhaps that also explains the profusion of new words.
Well, I'm flabbergasted by that the number of citations required by that particular lexicographer. I mean, I know Sue Butler at the Macquarie, and I know several other senior people involved in lexicography, mainly through the internet, to be honest with you. These are people I've not necessarily met, but I've read a lot of their essays and scholarly pieces about this area of new language. And possibly it's to do with it might be the magic number of six being the sort of high-end mainstream citations, independent, versus what that sounds to me like is a kind of amassing of kind of popular use. So in other words, if trolling as a verb meaning to bombard a chat room with pernicious comments, if that has been accepted by a large number of people, not necessarily people who carry sort of journalist or columnist after their name, then that that in itself is a persuasive argument.
You're on Summer Overnights. I'm Sunil Badami. This is David Assel, and we're talking about some of the new words, neologisms, that have come up in the past year, being a end-of-year roundup. So tell us, what are some of the words that got adopted by, you know, authorities like the Oxford English Dictionary this year, David?
Well, you mentioned in your intro that there was a word that has a very Australian background. I'd like to think that there are two, actually, but we'll get to the second one in a minute. Now, the first one actually is a word that has been floating about since about 2002, so at least for a decade. I know that my daughter was using it when she was 12, so that would have been about 4 or 5 years ago. But it's now, in 2013, as we start to see out the year, that it's been accepted as the word of the year, in fact, by the Oxford Dictionary, and that word is selfie. And selfie, unless you live, in a kind of a dead space with no phone and you're a Luddite, is to take a photo of yourself using a smartphone or a webcam usually, and often with somebody else or with a telling background. So that's a selfie.
Well, former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd copped a lot of flack for his use of the selfie. His many selfies. He was a master of the selfies. And I noticed earlier this month, at Nelson Mandela's funeral, that British Prime Minister David Cameron, President Barack Obama, and the Danish Prime Minister all happened to take a selfie.
I saw that same photo, and in fact, I saw a very grim-faced Michelle sitting right beside it. I don't know if it's got anything to do with the Danish Prime Minister is called Helle Thorning-Schmidt. And she's a very attractive woman, I'm going to have to say. And I think there was an element of flirtation going on, as it seemed to me, in Michelle's face. And also, too, let's face it, the context was probably not the best time for frivolity with a phone, which was Mandela's funeral. But be that as it may, most world leaders, even Angela Merkel, who seems sometimes a very humorless leader, can indulge in a selfie. And it's often a selfie that is thrust upon them by someone who meets them, or one of their constituents, or a fan, who insists upon a selfie. In other words, it's the citizen who takes the selfie photo and gets the world leader, or the pop singer, or the sports hero, implicates them within the frame.
Which is a little bit like a photobomb, where someone, an unwanted person happens to spoil your specially set up photo. Now, I noticed that the selfie has had a range of spin-offs. Would these be portmanteaus like the healthy, which is the hairstyle selfie, or the belfy, which is the bum selfie? I don't think I want to see one of those on Twitter.
Look, that's just a typical little breakaway. In the same way that vacation turns into staycation, we're happy with that. That makes sense. It's when you have a holiday at home. But then for it to turn into a praycation if it's a religious holiday, or a paycation if it's or even an oy vacation if you're Jewish.
And there may be a lot of people going to the ACT for a gayvation.
A gaycation, that's right.
A gaycation.
It's just a bit of fun.
I mean, I don't know what the difference between a drelfie, a drunken selfie, and the original selfie is, though, because someone happened to say that they managed to trace the origin of the selfie to this Australian online forum, which said, drunk at a mate's 21st, I tripped over and landed lip first with front teeth coming a very close second on set of steps. I had a hole about 1 centimetre long through my bottom lip. And sorry about the focus, it was a selfie.
I reckon you've channeled that voice perfectly. That's the voice of Nathan Hope. In fact, if he called in right this minute, he'd say, "How did you record me without even knowing?"
I mean, how did they manage to find that?
Well, it's a great bit of forensic research, isn't it, from the Oxford elves, and poor old Nathan Hope, who was the Hopi involved in, he was the bloke who split his lip at the 21st party. He was less than thrilled, I'm going to have to say, to be called up by ABC News 24 for an interview. it looked like, can I just fall over on some stairs when I was a young fool and be left alone?
After broadcasting it all over the internet.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's the problem. You know, the internet has a long tail, and this is what Hope is discovering. Sometimes a fat lip can turn around and bite you if you happen to declare it, you know, online.
So you could say his Adrelfi has become a Belfie.
it's become the mofo of all Belfies.
Well, now look, what are some other words? I see people walking around. I see a lot of this YOLO. What's that mean?
Well, this is the beauty of the internet age, because YOLO is it's an acronym for You Only Live Once. But why I think YOLO, in fact, it was the word of the year in, I think the Merriam-Webster gave it the word of the year last year. It's fantastic to see how it's so quickly evolved, not just in our lifetime, but almost in our lunchtime. Because YOLO was made popular by Drake, who's that rap singer. He wasn't the guy that coined the phrase, but he popularized the phrase, or the word, I should say. That's an important distinction, because some people do get confused by who originated the phrase, who coined the phrase, and who popularized the phrase. All of those are important gatekeepers when it comes to measuring a word's onset. But when YOLO was doing the rounds at its most popular, which would have been about 2010 to 2012, it was used in that carpe diem sense. So if you and I, you know, we decide, let's go skydiving. I don't know whether you've been skydiving. I never have. But in our sort of dreaded moment as we're about to step on the plane, we could easily just say YOLO to each other and go for one big bromantic leap. And YOLO would not have been ironic had we done that joy flight or that maybe that last flight of our lives about 18 months ago. But if we did it now and I said YOLO to you, then I could only assume that you are taking the pee. Because YOLO now is what's used by, you know, teenagers as a kind of mocking idea that eating yogurt out of date, 2 days out of date, is a bit of a YOLO experience.
Yeah.
It's just something that you do. It's not really carpe diem, but it's kind of a mock catch cry or war cry for doing something that's vaguely risky, but not even.
Now, look, I haven't done much skydiving, but I have done a bit of showrooming.
I know, I think we all have. It's terrible. And
Jerry Harvey of Harvey Norman hates showrooming, doesn't he?
Yeah. In fact, Jerry, I'd turn the radio off now, mate, because it's becoming prevalent. And this is the other word that has crept onto the Oxford Dictionary shortlist and will be included in those hallowed portals in 2014. And to showroom is to creep into any retail emporium, parading as a customer, but often gleaning details, even taking a snap of barcode and trying to verify, you know, what size you might be, what colour you like, and then going off to try and find the same product online and ideally at a cheaper price.
Wow.
And it's self-serving behaviour, and it's the other aspect of a lot of these neologisms that have some moralists in arms, that you look at things like selfie and meme and fub, which is that second word I was going to mention that comes from Australia, which is a phone snub. In other words, to block out present company by using your smartphone. There's something quite egotistic about a lot of these new words that it's hard to deny.
Like what people might call the kind of, I guess, the narcissism of the internet, you know, posting up on Twitter and Facebook and your opinions and your selfies and, you know, fubbing people all over the place. So tell us, what are some of the epic fails, to quote a word from last year, what are some of the epic fails, do you think, of words that didn't quite make it?
I went through the last of 7 year lists of Macquarie words of the year, And while many have, you know, since gone on to greatness, and I'm referring to the likes of Burkini, which is a burqa and a bikini. I think that's a really good portmanteau. I think a Google Ganger is certainly, you know, to look up your name and realize that you share your name with several others. It's like a namesake on the internet. We've talked about bromances. We've talked about and glamping, glamour camping. I think that's here to stay. But then I saw some that really have not gone anywhere. And these are words like ecocentric. I don't know about you, but I don't think that it sounds sexy, but it hasn't caught on.
Is it like people, Prius drivers?
Yeah, it is.
You know, with that, you're looking very satisfied.
It could actually still, it could still have its day, but maybe we're not quite ready for it yet.
I'm going to get a few calls from Prius drivers I can see after this conversation.
And two more, a cyber athlete. I don't even know what that is, a cyber athlete.
Is it like a professional video game player?
Probably it is, yeah. It's maybe someone who plays Wii and reckons they're doing a cardio workout.
I mean, I had a look at some of the previous words of the year from the OED, like Chav, Sudoku, yeah. Bothered, yeah. Carbon Footprint from 2007. I don't know how much we use that. Credit Crunch from 2008. And last year's word was Omnishambles. It sounds like a floor drobe to me.
I reckon that's a ripper of a word, because it's there's a far filthier version that we've got that I've heard that starts with cluster. What's good about Omnishambles is that it has a TV genesis, and I think we need to embrace telly a lot more in our neologisms, because TV, particularly a kind of satirical sketch comedy or sitcoms, can really be a great fount of new language.
Well, I know one of the words of the year of 2006 was bothered from the Catherine Tate Show. Bothered. And Time magazine was bothered about a few words like bromance, foodie, Twitterverse, lols, and epic fail, as well as FOMO, which I understand is the equivalent of YOLO, fear of missing out. Tell me, David, yeah. Do you have any predictions for words of 2014?
I do, and this is something that I've noticed. I've got teenager kids, and they're starting to use this sort of version of language more and more. It's we talk about text speak and how it reduces words to letters, and obviously, LOL is an example of that. Now, in the case of when it's a when those letters are pronounceable, and LOL is pronounceable as a word. LOL, just as GIF or JIF is pronounceable, depending upon how you pronounce that G. But there are a lot of these abbreviated clusters that actually are not pronounceable. And to give you a really good example is there's the phrase can't be stuffed, which is a common little tweet amongst 15 and 16-year-olds of either gender, is CBS. CBS, can't be stuffed. But now what CBS is turning into, and I'm hearing it both in my son and my daughter, is Siebs. In other words, they are converting those letters into a phoneme, into a sound unit. And I reckon that is going to be a new spike where it's like a deeper slang, in the same way that we say dog and bone is phone, and suddenly just the dog is the phone. In other words, the slang becomes truncated. I think 2014, 2015 will see a rise in that these spoken textonyms.
Well, you heard it here first. Look, it's been a real wordy bromance today, David. And grats,
verbalicious.
Yeah, grats for the balayage. Totes cool, seriously. You can check out David's work on his blog at davidastle.com or follow him on Twitter at don'tattempt, with no apostrophe, as well as checking out his books, Puzzles and Words 2, released this month, and Clutopia last month, which are both published by Allen and Unwin. You're on Summer Overnights with me, Sunil Badami, on ABC Local Radio, and we've been chatting to author, lexicographer, and wordaholic David Astle.